Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Moto, and once again, we had a race, and it seems like lately we've just been having a lot of stuff to talk about after the race. It's been both classes. This class at Ironman, it was the 450s. So, let's just jump right on into it. We are coming off of a two-week break. Going into Ironman, which is typically the last round of the season, but due to Motocross of Nations, they decided to switch it up a little bit to give the track a little bit more, track workers probably a little bit more time to get everything ready for the Nations. And before the race, in qualifying, they came out and announced officially the Team USA, and we have in the riding on the 250, so the MX2 class, we have Hayden Deegan making his Motocross of Nations debut. I know I said this last week, but it wasn't official. So we got Deegan making his Nations debut on the 250. Last 250 Motocross race, by the way, did ink that new deal for a 450 Motocross next year. But anyway, back to the Nations. We have on the 450s now, Eli Tomac and Chase Sexton. Eli was there last year. Sexton was supposed to be there last year, but injury took him out. And so Eli was his sub. So let's just hope that that Sexton's able to make it through and get to the Nations. Might be difficult with what we saw, but obviously we will get to that when we get to that. 250 qualifying, we had Seth Hammaker. He's been showing a little bit of speed here lately. Him and his teammate Garrett Marchbanks, 1 and 2 in qualifying. They've both been showing up pretty solid the last couple of rounds leading into the break. And here we are now with Hammaker getting the fastest qualifier at a 203.447. Marchbanks 0.3 behind them, and Deegan, your championship leader, was in third, half a second behind Seth Hammaker. And one thing that really sticks out to me here was Tom Viel coming back off an injury. He missed Washougal, so he had 3 weeks off the well, 3 weeks off from racing. And I think this break did pretty good for him. And we'll get into that, obviously, a little bit later as well after both of the motos. But he came out qualified fifth. Now, he was the first guy out of a one-second range. He was 1.042 seconds behind Hammaker with a 204.489. And then right behind him was Deegan's closest championship rival Joe Shimoda with a 204.549. One thing that did kind of surprise me, now I can't find his name. What the heck? I've got to do all this. Austin Faulkner, there we are, 28th, leading into Ironman and into the break. He really started to become a little bit more like the typical Austin Faulkner we've seen for the past, I don't know how many years before injuries and whatnot have seemed to always derail him. But he started to come back into that with top five motos, top five overall, and now he's back 5.5 seconds off the pace, qualified 28th. So it was a little bit of a surprise, but it does seem like most of the triumphs, well, really all the triumphs, struggled. The fastest triumph in qualifying and overall for the entire day was Mikhail Harrop, which also, supposedly there's a little bit of a talk to keep him over here more than just a little summer rental type of rider, because originally he was over here I'm pretty sure I touched on this a little bit last week too, or at least one of my last couple episodes I talked on it, how originally he was just supposed to be over here for this summer because he aged out of the MX2 class over in the GP series, and Triumph didn't have a 450 ready for him, so he came over here and he's riding a 250 over here, and he's doing very, very good. I hope he stays over here. Maybe he's on the 250 for one more year and then maybe bump him up to the 450. Supercross would be obviously very interesting for him, assuming he's most likely never really ridden it, especially never really raced it, I'm assuming. But yeah, the assuming word in there is the big one. So now jumping into 250 Moto number one, Jalik Swole goes out, grabs the hole shot. And one thing in this race that did surprise me in the very beginning, and then a couple laps in, totally forgot about him, was Julien Bomaire, Juju. He had a great start and was in third place. Joe Shimoda was in second, going across the hole shot line. Joe was able to get into the lead very quickly. I was going to say pretty quickly, but yeah, it was very quickly. Deegan was seventh. And, well, they said, according to the hole shot graphic that goes up on Peacock, Joe Shimoda got the hole shot, but it really looked like Jalik Swole was able to grab the hole shot. It just shows how quickly, I guess, Shimoda was able to get into the lead. Deegan was able to, obviously, he wasn't stuck in seventh very long, just about a turn and a half, really. And then right before the finish, he was able to get past Swole on the inside for second place. And then, for me, it really kind of became a timed race. Looking at the clock, how much time was left, and looking to see if Joe Shimoda was able to put in a good gap, or if he was able to... Or if Deegan was able to not let him run away with it and kind of chase him down for the lead and the win. So 5 minutes in, Shimoda already had a 5.7 second lead, and I thought, all right, here we go. This is going to be Joe Shimoda goes out, gets a big lead, maybe 5 minutes left. Deegan goes in there and kind of sneaks up on him. It seems like that's kind of how things have been going lately. But all this was happening, Tom Vielle, like I mentioned, he did have a 3 week no racing break, if probably the best way I could put it. And, he was able to get past Jalik Swole after, or going up Godzilla, which I heard quite a few track changes. We'll get to that later. That'll be a big takeaway there. Little sneak peek. He was able to get past Jalik Swole for third place, and it seemed like this is probably the best I've seen Tom Vielle ride. Even though he wasn't up fighting with the front two, he was at least, probably the best way I could put it, he was fighting with the second class of the 250 division. He wasn't quite up in that first class like he has been years past and races past, but he was the top of the second class, second tier, whatever way you want to try and word that. And Levi Kitchen, the struggle summer for Levi Kitchen, summer of struggles is what we'll call it for Levi Kitchen. Just absolutely continued. He was in fifth place, running pretty decent, went down, fell, and wasn't able to get up very good, and got up in 11th, where he ended up finishing 14th. So, I mean, yeah, Levi's just been absolutely struggling all summer long. There's no doubt about that. And then about the halfway mark, not too much really happened, but the halfway mark, Shimoda had his gap a little bit over, or it was 7 seconds, sorry, over Hayden Deegan. And it was, like I just mentioned, Tom Vial wasn't out fighting with the top guys, but he was the he's the top guy of the second tier. He was 20 seconds behind Joe Shimoda. So obviously, Vial wasn't used to the race pace, I guess you could call it. And he was struggling a little bit. One cool thing that did happen was Triumph got perfect opportunities for pictures. They had three of their guys battling at the exact same time, hitting jumps. Like, two of them were hitting them, and the one behind was hitting it like a second later. I think it was Harup, Jordan Smith, and Jaleek Swole were able to take a little impromptu Triumph photo shoot going there at Ironman. And like I mentioned earlier, this first 250 moto became kind of a time race, stopwatch type of deal, if you want to call it that, because 5 minutes left, Hayden Deegan was able to get right on the rear tire of a Joe Shimoda, and then going into that finish, right before the finish line, that right-hand turn, Shimoda said he was going outside all day long, and Deegan just went inside, kind of went across some ruts, got in front of Shimoda, slowed down, definitely could have gone faster, but that's just racing, kind of gamesmanship, race craft. Yeah. Really just kind of a smart move for Hayden Deegan. Came to pretty much a complete stop. Killed all Shimoda's momentum because obviously wasn't really expecting it, and then that happened. So Deegan was able to make the pass there and make it stick. And that was really it for 250 moto number one. So Deegan went out 6.4 seconds he won by, and the big shocker was Tom Vial, 51 seconds behind Deegan, and what'd that make it? 46 seconds behind, 45 seconds behind Joe Shimoda. So like I mentioned quite a few times already, hopefully last time I mention it, Tom Vial, not up there fighting for race wins and whatnot this weekend, but he was at least up there getting podiums. He had a 10-second gap to Garrett Marchbanks in fourth place. So, it just seemed like Vial lost the toe and wasn't really able to keep up with them first two guys. And that was really his big struggle both races. Austin Faulkner, like I said, he kind of seemed to fall off a little bit this last weekend. I don't know if it's a track thing, if they kind of went in with a different bike setup thing. But he finished 11th here in Moto 1. And Jaleek Swole, who has now come out and said he will be out for the rest of the season, finished in 10th after starting in, what was it, second place? Yeah, second place. According to the graphic across the line, according to my notes, he got the whole shot. Mikel Harup, solid top five. He's really accelerated, I think, a lot faster than I was expecting. Probably a lot faster than a lot of guys were expecting, because he wasn't coming over with the typical, like, Tom Vial type of hype or Ken Roczen type of hype, even Marvin Musquin hype. Winning championships and back-to-back championships, and then coming over here, I don't think he won any championships over there. And I'm going to look like an absolute idiot if he did one, but I'm pretty sure he did not win any. No, looking at his results from last year, he definitely wasn't winning championships. See, I mean, he got one podium in Argentina last year, and another one in Lombok, or whatever the hell that is. So yeah, he got two podiums last year, and now this year he's coming out and fighting for top fives in a very competitive, very fast 250 class over here in the States. I think it's Moto 2 time now. Deegan comes out, grabs the whole shot. Vial this time got a lot better, or not a lot better, but he got a very good start. He was second. Early, Shimoda was fourth. Third was Michael Mosman, and then he had a crazy crash and ended up getting up in ninth. He was able to get all the way up, or ninth. I don't know why I even said ninth. He got up in dead last, was able to get all the way up into 12th, though. So, very impressive ride here. This is still Moto 1. I was going to say, he went from 40th to 12th. That's that would definitely have more people talking about it. He didn't finish the race. I really thought he got up and finished the race. I do know he did at least get up and ride off the track. Jalik Swole also unable to finish Moto 2 here. Kind of goes in part with what I just mentioned. In being out for the rest of the series. So, once again, at this point, we had reset it here. We had Deegan in first, Vial second, and Joe Shimoda in third. Shimoda was able to get into second fairly quickly, like he was in Moto number one, except for this time it was second, obviously, and not first place. And then it basically became the same thing. Can Shimoda keep Deegan in check? A lot of the season when you go out, or when they go out and you see Hayden Deegan with a whole shot, Shimoda's usually in second very quickly, and it just becomes, can Joe Shimoda close down that 2.5 to 3 second gap that it seems like Deegan at beginning of races is fairly okay with keeping, and then at the end of races he just says, screw it, and I'm out. That was kind of what happened here. Moto 2, not the craziest, so most of my notes here are based off of time-wise. 10 minutes in, Deegan had a 3.9-second gap over Shimoda and 6.4 seconds over Vial. It stayed that way for a good while, because with 7 minutes left, like I mentioned, really nothing crazy happened in this race. Nothing of noteworthy, honestly. 7 minutes left, Joe Shimoda made a little mistake and lost 3 seconds, and that sealed the deal. Deegan going 1-1, Shimoda 2-2, and Vial 3-3. Except I do believe old Tommy was able to keep it. Yeah, he kept it a little bit closer this time. Deegan goes out, wins by 11.7 seconds, and the exact thing really that I mentioned of Hayden Deegan, seems like he kind of is okay with keeping it close throughout the first half of the race, and then he just goes out there and absolutely throws the gauntlet down. And honestly, I've been pretty impressed this year with him on not doing anything stupid, really, I guess I should say, and like throwing it away for the most part. Because remember last year he had a couple dumb big crashes that just seemed like he was trying to force too much and do too much. But it hasn't really seemed like that's happened this year. So looking overall results, Deegan went 1-1 for first overall. He said he had to go out there. Motocross the Nations gets announced at Ironman. They're racing at Ironman. He said he had to go out there and throw down. So yeah, he did that. Went 1-1. Shimoda 2-2 for second, and VL 3-3 for third. So that makes it very easy to figure out the overall if the top three guys just get the exact same positions for all three, all two motos. Garrett Marchbanks, another guy who has been very sneaky good, I feel like, this outdoor season. He's never talked about in the championship, but he, it seems like he's also kind of like I was talking about Mikel Harp earlier. Always seems to be battling top five. A couple times we've seen him battle for a podium, and one time we've heard him interview on the podium. Yeah, he has really, really impressed me this season. That is, that's for sure. So I think it's time we get to the big takeaways for this week in the 250 class. First one, we're only going to have two because there's going to be a combined one for 250s and 450s. First one, Hayden Deegan coming out and making a statement. Like I just mentioned, he sat on the podium after getting announced for Motocross the Nations at Ironman. He said he had to go out there and go 1-1 for the fans. And yeah, that is exactly what he did. He went out there and, especially second moto, seemed like he was able to put a little bit of a licking on Joe Shimoda, a little bit more than he did in the first moto, led wire to wire in the second moto. So yeah, first big takeaway was Hayden Deegan and just how strong he was at Ironman. He said he found some really cool lines, and in his head he thought, well, there's no way Joe Shimoda's doing this stuff. So that just gets me all sorts of giddy and excited for Motocross the Nations to hopefully see him do the same thing against some of them European riders. Yeah, looking forward to that. I got a little sidetracked there in my mind thinking about the Nations. Big takeaway number two, the break that we just came off of. It seemed like it really helped Tom Viel and didn't really seem to make a big difference for everybody else, except for Austin Faulkner, maybe, who was went 11-10 for ninth overall, and leading up to it, it seemed like he was going to start maybe getting in the top five overall. But yeah, it seemed like the break, only person really that it helped was VL, because once again, we saw Deegan go out there and win, and we saw Shimoda in second. Very familiar places for them too, except for the couple times they've swapped places, and obviously Red Bud, a little bit of an anomaly, big word, for Hayden Deegan. So yeah, it seemed like the break didn't really do too much. So, wish we could have had racing. I understand how they got to give the guys at least 1 week off towards the end of the season. I get that. They want a lot of attention on Loretta Lynn's, which I did watch a little bit of that coverage, and it was difficult to watch. Difficult to hear the commentators, and when you just jump in the middle of the race, a little bit hard for me to keep my attention. But I've also got a little bit of a squirrel brain, and if you listen to this at all, you can tell that. So yeah, I think that will just about wrap us up here for the 250s, and now we will get on to the big boys on the 450s. But before we do that, I almost forgot about the points. So Hayden Deegan now has 51-point lead over Joe Shimoda. Everybody else is eliminated because the next closest, being Garrett Marchbanks, is 132 down and that's just mathematically not close enough for him to win the championship anymore. So, for Deegan going into Unadilla this next week, all he needs to do, obviously, just maintain that, and then he'll go into Bud's Creek with a greater than 50-point lead, and he will be the back-to-back champion of the 250 Pro Motocross class. But looking into SMX, he has already clinched the number one seed for SMX. So, yeah, there's nothing else left for him to do in SMX. And like I said, all he's got to do is just basically match Joe Shimoda next week. And that's pretty much what they've been doing lately anyway, going either Deegan going 1-2 or Deegan going, or no, Deegan going 1-1 or Deegan going 1-2 with Shimoda going 2-1. Which would match them in points. Obviously, Shimoda would still get the overall, but it would match them in points and make Deegan the champion. So now on to the 450s. Fastest qualifier, very familiar name, Jet Lawrence. Once again on top with a 201.059. We know coming off of the last race in Washougal before the break, he said not his favorite track, doesn't do the best there statistically, even though it's the one other time he's raced it on a 450, he went 1-1, but he said he doesn't get along with the track, so yeah, we'll just let him have that one. But he was still able to qualify fastest here now in Ironman. And RJ Hampshire, a little foreshadowing for what the rest of the night or rest of the day was for him, career day for him, really, qualified second. And Chase Sexton, your last winner, qualified third. I almost said first because now I got a. I was correct. For some reason, I thought maybe Washougal wasn't the last race, but it was. Sexton third, and what I really like to see is Jorge Prado in fourth. I think he had his best day all season, Supercross and Motocross. Yeah, I know he didn't do a lot of Supercross, but I think he had his best racing this last Saturday. Qualified fourth, so he started out hot, and he was able to just kind of keep the momentum working. I'm assuming they probably found something in the long break. I guess he was riding quite a bit of Supercross during the break, most likely getting ready for SMX, but I know some guys have said riding Supercross during the Motocross season will kind of give you a better idea, or at least an idea, for a bike change for Motocross, or riding Motocross towards the end of Supercross, getting ready for that series. They've said the same exact thing, that sometimes it'll give you an idea on a bike change that will end up being correct. One interesting thing, Hunter Lawrence qualifying second was the first guy in the 202s. Prado, Sexton, Hampshire, and Jetson were all in the 201s. Hunter Lawrence, after the race, he said it was one of the harder races of the year, the hottest and humidest. Heat and humidity were the worst at Ironman, and you could tell with by how beat up the track was that it was not an easy race. One other quick thing in qualifying here, Team Australia for the Motocross Nations, they had their entire team at this race. All three of them were racing 450s. Kyle Webster will be on the 250 when it comes to the Nations. But he was over here racing Ironman, probably just trying to get familiar with the track, even though he is on a 450 here, and he will be riding a 250 when it comes to Nations. And we also had Dylan Ferrandis back, which is nice, but sadly he hasn't really done anything outdoors since 2021 when he won the championship. Now, it was his rookie year, so maybe he'll be able to find something He's been struggling on that Honda, that is for sure, both with health and just straight up bike issues, problems. Kind of sounds like Sexton and on a KTM and Prado on a Kawasaki. But getting into Moto number one now, Eli Tomac. Man, he grabbed the whole shot. What could have been? Could have been a great, great race for Tomac. Also, I don't even know why I started with that when we had the biggest controversy of the entire season so far. Jet Lawrence went early. He said someone flinched next to him. I don't really know if anyone flinched. And now the air conditioning's on, and hopefully that doesn't get picked up too much. He flinched, went early, ran into the gate, pushed the gate over, and then technically he did have a little bit of an advantage over everybody else because when the rest of the gate dropped, he was very, well, not, I shouldn't say very far. He was probably about 2-3 feet in front of the gate. Where is the best angle? And I can't. They don't have a good angle of it. Yeah, Jet. He was lined up next to Barsha, right by the doghouse. And I don't think anybody flinched. I think when he said someone, oh no, the guy next to him did flinch. So then he just went, ran into the gate, and then went again, pushed the gate the wrong way, and they deemed that as an advantage. And in the end, he was penalized an entire lap. I don't think he should have been penalized an entire lap. He came out, and he was obviously very upset about it. In real time, he finished third. In going back and switching everything around, he ended up finishing 17th. So that immediately took him out of any chances for an overall. Basically guaranteed he wasn't going to extend his points lead. So it was it's very lucky that he was able to come into Ironman with such a big points lead as he has. The real issue I have is there have been other people cut track, go off the track, not really slow down. Ruling's a little wishy-washy, but this, the early jump on the gate, that is an actual rule. If you go over the gate and you're deemed to have an advantage, it is an automatic one-lap penalty. I don't think that should be the case. I was listening to the Cian Cerullo and Justin Brighton podcast. They were talking about how maybe it should be a little bit more like regular sports where if you have a penalty, you find out right then you got to do something. Maybe in hockey, you got to go sit in the penalty box. Base or football, you got to move the ball back or forward, whoever the penalty was on. And I believe it was Justin Brayton came up with an idea of maybe you got to go through the pits for like 10 seconds to kind of let everybody get a little bit further. Because, I mean, Jet, looking at the finishing gap, if he pulls in the pits for 10 seconds, then he's at a battle with RJ Hampshire. Because Jet finished 16 seconds back and RJ was 26. So they would have been in a battle, but so he jumps the gate, still comes out in 17th place because he hit it, stopped, hit it again. That's what knocked it forward. And then once he knocked it forward, he kind of double-clutched the bike, so it a little go-stop-go situation there. Went into the turn and basically dead last. The only person behind him was Barsha, who actually did get stuck in the gate. So I think they just maybe need to, the AMA needs to figure out a better way to issue penalties kind of in real time while the race is still going on, because with this, jumping the gate, it's if you're deemed to have an advantage, which, I mean, you could see he did technically have an advantage when the rest of the gates dropped. He was already out by about half a wheel to a full wheel length. So I feel like they got to do a better job at seeing that and then being able to penalize them in real time. Now, the off-track penalties, that's a whole nother story, because then you got to worry about having a bunch of different spotters out there, which I know they do. That's how they're able to black flag people and whatnot. But that's just a whole nother situation where that's a little bit of a gray area with the rules. I think that's about what I got on the Jet Lawrence penalty. That's kind of maybe sort of screwed him over a little bit. But anyway, getting back to the racing. So we're going to talk about Jet in this race like there's no penalty. Tomac got his first hole shot of the year, which is kind of crazy to think about. Hunter Lawrence also got a very good start. He was in second. Prado starting to figure it out a little bit. I'm really hoping that he ended up actually finding something during this break, kind of make him a little bit more competitive. Maybe see him on the podium one of these last couple of rounds, or even in the playoffs. Sexton, eighth place, not the greatest start. Yeah, he's had some pretty tough starts here since coming back, except for last round where he went wire to wire. No, he did not go wire to wire. That's on me. He's had a little bit of struggle with his starts, but I mean, Sexton never really been considered a very good starter. Sexton also considered a little bit of a crasher. He did end up tucking the front end right before the finish line on the first lap. So he went from, that's the wrong recap, he went from fifth down to ninth. And at the end of lap one, Jet Lawrence was in 20, or lap two, sorry. Jet Lawrence was in 21st place. So just the straight up fact that he was able to get all the way to third, asterisks, was very, very impressive to me. But back to the front here. Eli Tomac leading. Hunter Lawrence right before the finish line. That right-hand turn that I've talked about with Deegan with the little brake check type of move and where Sexton went down. Hunter was able to go on the inside of Eli Tomac and grab the lead there. And RJ Hampshire and Chase Sexton were able to get past Justin Cooper very, very quickly. And then shortly after that, Jet Lawrence, on his way up there, was also able to get past Justin Cooper. So Cooper went from third all the way back to sixth, where Eli Tomac ended up finishing. And then Sexton, going into the split lane, was able to make a move on RJ Hampshire. And this is when I noticed Eli Tomac started to fade a little bit. It was about halfway through. Started out front and then just wasn't able to hold on to it. And apparently he was sick. Didn't tell anybody. Steve Mathis went out there and said that nobody Eli Tomac's age has ever tried to do what he's doing right now. And I guess Eli got a little offended by that. And in between motos, he went on to the old X machine, Twitter machine, whatever you want to call it, and called out Steve Mathis for not going to press conferences and scared of fireworks at Red Bud. I don't know, a whole lot of crazy things with Eli Tomac. Definitely wouldn't expect him to be posting on social media in between motos. If anything, sounds like something his 250 teammate Hayden Deegan would be doing, not Eli Tomac. But anyway, with 10 minutes left, Hunter Lawrence had a gap at 12 and a half seconds. But then it was quickly down to 7.8 seconds because I noticed, especially after he made the pass on Eli Tomac, it seemed like his bike was just, he was struggling with his bike. He talked about it in different interviews, how it seemed like in some corners his bike would do one thing and then in other corners it would do a different thing, and it just wasn't set up really for the entire track. It was a very difficult, especially first moto, difficult and wet track. Second moto, it seemed like it really dried out and got really hard packed. You could see some blue groove coming through. AC's off now. Where were we now? Hunter really struggling with his bike, and that's when Chase Sexton started to really mount the charge on Hunter Lawrence. And the jump where they go underneath the bridge. Wait, I didn't even have the big Chase Sexton and Jet Lawrence battle in my notes for some reason. I think I was just so intrigued by it, I forgot to write it down. So after the finish line, going into the right-hand turn, finish line, you can either double, then single, and hit the wall. But Jet was going, he was just tripling the finish line jump and then carrying a lot of speed into the wall. And then he was able to carry a lot of speed into that next right-hand turn. And that's exactly what he did. He tripled the finish line jump. Sexton doubled it like he was doing all day long. And so Jet was just able to get a wheel on him, go from outside to inside, kind of close off Sexton. But then coming out of the turn, Sexton was able to get up right next to him again. And then he was able to get about 3/4 of a bike length over Jet Lawrence going into that first turn, that first left-hand turn, and was able to just... There's contact. There's definitely contact because Jet, I don't think, was expecting Chase to do that. And Chase just went for the inside line. Jet kind of came in contact with Sexton's back tire. I can see watching it here. Jet definitely wasn't expecting Chase to shut the door that hard because Jet was aimed right for the inside line. Ends up hitting Sexton's back tire, going out wide, and then that was with 2 minutes and 20 seconds left. Jet Lawrence just kind of backed it down at that point. And then it went to Chase Sexton and Hunter Lawrence, where Chase was able to make the move going through that little like bridge jump there. Sexton just carrying a whole lot more speed, able to get the power to the ground, and was able to make the pass right before the little rollers heading to the finish line section. And that was it. So originally we thought we had Sexton finishing about 2.5 seconds in front of Hunter. And then Jet, like I said, he kind of backed it down after coming in contact with Chase a little bit. He was back 16 seconds. Obviously, we now know that I got penalized, finished down in 17th. And then we had Hampshire, Justin Cooper, Prado, and Tomac. So Tomac realistically, being sick went from first down to seventh, but as the results technically show, he finished in sixth with old Jetson finishing 17th. So going into Moto 2, Jet, not a very happy camper. Gee, can't understand why. He found out, obviously, about the penalty because then it messed with his gate pick. Got the 17th gate pick instead of the third gate pick. And was still able to get a pretty solid jump getting out of the gate. There it is. 10th place coming out of the gate. So not too bad with the 17th gate pick. Sexton got a very, very bad jump. Like I've mentioned plenty of times before. But we had Eli Tomac grabbing the whole shot again. But that was not long-lived because Hunter Lawrence was able to make the pass on Eli very quickly after that in that little split lane, which I guess some guys aren't the biggest fan of that split lane. And so then at the end of this lap, Tomac went, he was going outside and to hook back up onto the start straight. And when I say he was going outside, he was going to the complete outside. And there wasn't really like a big berm. It was kind of flat at the top of that corner. But he was going out there and Jet was just able to cut underneath and make the pass for second place. And then he set his sights on Hunter Lawrence, who, once he got to Hunter Lawrence, it was an absolute insane move that Jet made. Going into that big, like, monster triple or whatever they call it, Jet scrubbed this thing so hard, stayed so much lower than Hunter. So then he was able to get to the ground faster and control the inside going into the next left-hand turn. And that's how he was able to make the move on Hunter. And then he just absolutely ran away from it. But I thought we were going to have Sexton coming from behind again. He did crash early. Only lost one spot, though. And then two laps in a row, right where I mentioned he made a move on Hunter Lawrence for the lead, Sexton passed RJ Hampshire and Jorge Prado in that same exact spot, kind of under the bridge. And I thought we had, what did we have? We had Sexton in third at this point. Hunter in second. Yeah, and then Hunter went down. No, Sexton fourth, Hunter in third. Hunter goes down right in front of Sexton. All Sexton has to do is beat Hunter Lawrence in the second moto, and he gets the overall. And then absolute chaos ensues for Chase Sexton. He makes the pass on Hunter, has the overall for videos going 10 seconds before he hit that wall jump. Brake, they say the rear brake, KTM came out and said the rear brake locked up and it just threw off his center of gravity. And then when he, what's interesting though is, the front wheel never spun while it was in the air, I don't think. But the front wheel wasn't spinning. The rear wheel was spinning until you can see him kind of hit his right foot on the rear brake.
and then take it off, and it was spinning again. Then he tried to get back on the bike. And obviously, I don't think the rear wheel was a problem anymore. Then it became the front wheel with how hard he hit. He landed right on the front wheel, basically. And I think it bent something, broke spokes or something in that front wheel that kind of ripped the spoke sideways. Because then when he gets on the bike again for the first time, gets on it, goes to hit the gas, front tire just digs down in the dirt, back end slides out, tried that multiple times, gets thrown off the bike, and then I don't understand how it could be a rear brake problem, and then he hits and it becomes a front brake problem. But there was points where his front wheel would spin, and then because he was able to ride it for about 5 feet, it kind of seemed like the front wheel would make one rotation, and then it hit a spoke again or something, and just completely stop on him again. And so he ended up just leaving his bike at the side of the track and walked off. I think he's done riding for KTM. I don't think he wants to be there anymore. I think he's just looking forward to getting on this Monster Energy Kawasaki, starting fresh on a green bike now. So he's done for the motocross season, coming back for the playoffs. He said he came back for the motocross season to get himself a good seed for the playoffs. And I mean, he got himself a handful of points in the couple races that he did. Says he's got a hurt shoulder now and he's going to rest it for the playoffs. I think going into the playoffs, he's never finished the playoffs, always crashed out in the last moto. I think with him going to the Nations, even if he's in championship contention, Team USA selfishness here. I say last moto, don't go out there, Chase, because they've had the playoffs for 2 years. And 2 years in a row, you've crashed out of the last moto and got hurt. So hopefully when he comes back for the playoffs, he will be okay. That was basically it for this race. So we had craziness at the beginning of 450 moto number one. We had craziness about halfway-ish. A little over halfway through moto number two, and Jet was out there riding very angry. The only other notable thing was Tomac was in second. He stalled it, and Hunter was able to get around him for second place. So it finished with Jet ended up winning by 7 seconds, and Eli Tomac was 12 seconds back. But the big thing here is the overall Hunter, that's the wrong class again, you idiot. Hunter Lawrence with a 2-2 ends up getting his first career 450 pro motocross overall. And he had 10 second places before he got his first 10, it says 10 overall podiums. I thought it was 14 podiums in 10 second places before getting his first overall. His entire 450 motocross career, he hasn't been outside the top five one time. So just very, very impressive by Hunter Lawrence. If his brother wasn't in this class, he might be the man that Jet Lawrence is right now, because he's constantly been in second place the entire time he's been in this class. Last year, second place behind Sexton. This year, second place behind his brother Jet. So just very, very impressive and exciting for Hunter Lawrence to get his first overall. Set on the podium, he just doesn't have enough energy to celebrate. That's how bad it was for them. But now we got RJ Hampshire with his first ever 450 overall podium. He had a moto podium. He hasn't been able to get the overall podium yet, but he was able to do that with 3-4 moto scores. And Eli Tomac getting kind of bailed out a little bit by Jet Lawrence in the penalty, going 6-3 for third overall. Only reason I say 6-3 is because Jet went 17-1 for sixth overall. Eli Tomac rounds out the overall podium. And like I mentioned, Jorge Prado, he might have hopefully found something in this break because he went 5-6 for fifth overall. And I do believe that, yeah, it ties his career high that he had back in Southwick, where he got a fifth overall as well, but then he went 6-9-14. Then he just went the complete wrong way. So hopefully, in these last two rounds, he keeps trending up, maybe fights for a moto podium. Who knows, maybe even an overall podium. That would be very nice to see out of old Jorge Prado. Don Fernandez, first race back, 7-8 for 7th overall. And then you go way down here to Chase Sexton. Once I find him, 10th overall, 140. And like I mentioned, he is out the remainder of the pro motocross season. So we take Sexton out of this championship, at least for now. But good news, we get to add old Ken Roczen to the championship for at least Unadilla. Who knows, hopefully even if he's feeling good enough, he goes to Buds Creek as well. But now looking at the points here for the 450s, Jet Lawrence needs, he's at 47, so he needs 3 points to go. He needs to go get 3 points over his brother, Hunter. And I think there's a good chance he does that. I wouldn't be shocked. Here's my prediction. Next week, Jet goes 1-1. He's mad. He's going to go to Unadilla 2 times in his 450 career. And he's going to get 2 number 1 plates in his 450 career at Unadilla. I think he goes out there, goes 1-1, and wraps this thing up 1 round early. I guess really that's about it for the 450s. Looking into SMX, Justin Cooper has the SMX Championship number one seed all but wrapped up. Correct. Yeah, it is wrapped up. He is over 100 points more than Jet Lawrence in fourth place, and in second place is Cooper Webb. He's not riding. Chase Sexton, third place. He's not riding either. So, yeah, we have our number one seeds all wrapped up for SMX. Am I seeing this right? Yeah, there's a 113-point gap. I don't know why I was second-guessing my mental math. Oh, yeah, that's right, because it was mental math. Big takeaway time. Obviously, Jet Lawrence, first moto penalty, has to be in there. Honestly, I think it's Jet Lawrence for both of them. His first moto penalty, and then what he was able to do in that second moto, go out there. He could go out there, be all down in the dumps, saying, oh, woe is me, I got screwed over. But no, he went out there and just, his own words, I watched their Lawrence's video, said he went out there and, I think it was, mollywopped them all in the first couple laps. I mean, it's exactly what he did. He went out there, got the lead very angrily, and completely checked out and didn't care about anything behind him after that point. Third big takeaway is the track. Like I said, I was only going to have two for the 250s because this one was going to be the same, and I didn't think it would be needed to completely repeat myself, even though I've done it plenty of times already, both out of every show and probably this one. They made track changes. They knocked down Godzilla a little bit. I know some writers are happy they knocked down Godzilla and made it a little safer, but I've also heard some writers say it was a lot of fun hitting that jump. They also, not too many guys liked the woods section. It was very sketchy to watch on TV. There was points where the riders on the track, they were getting so far left, they would get out of view of the camera because they were going basically behind a tree, and then they'd have to kind of inch their way back right a little bit, and it looked like almost every single time from that camera angle, it looked like someone was going to hit a tree, and it was going to be an absolute catastrophe. So I don't think the guys like the woods, kind of the wood section. I know it's kind of supposed to be a little GNCC-ish because Ironman is so famous for their GNCC races. I mean, it's easy to tell it's for the GNCC because all the hay bales back there are wrapped in Ironman GNCC advertisement. And then also, it seemed like it got very ruddy. And then first moto, it was unpredictable with the wood chips on top. Things were moving a lot. And then it seemed like second moto, it got super dry, super baked, and it seemed like really nothing moved. I saw a clip of Jet Lawrence going up a face of a jump, kind of, I don't remember where on the track it was because it was like a fan video where you kind of sort of turn and jump at the same time, and he just went straight across about three or four ruts up the face of the jump and just took off that way. So it got super ruddy and super dry, it seemed like, in the second. Well, not dry, but hard-packed. A lot more hard-packed in Moto 2 than it seemed like in Moto 1, at least. So, yeah, those are the big takeaways. I gave my 450 prediction. My 250 prediction will probably be wrong, but this is just because I want to see a championship go down to the final round. I'm picking 450 rider for the Motocross Nations for Team Japan, but still currently a 250 guy, Joe Shimoda. Like I said, he's down 51 points to Hayden Deegan right now. I would just like to see Shimoda push this to the last round just to get a little bit something more to talk about, because if everything gets wrapped up next week, then I'm still going to definitely watch at Bud's Creek, though, that's for sure. I think that'll about wrap us up here. Talking underscore Moto on X. Go do all the good, fun stuff. Follow, like, comment, all that stuff. And we'll be back next week for Unadilla, Justin Cooper, and Justin Bam Bam Barsha's home track. Barsha usually pretty solid at Unadilla. Might go back home, might have some flashbacks and turn into old Bam Bam. So who knows, maybe we'll get some fireworks from Barsha. One can only hope. But yeah, we'll get Cole Davies back in the 250 class as well. Forgot to mention that earlier. We will get Kenny Roczen back in the 450 class. So very excited for those returning guys. Good thing I already said that's all we got, because now that is actually all we got. Talking underscore Moto on X. Like I said, go do all the good, fun stuff, and we'll be back next week. See ya.